Chapter 21. The Deadline That Passed. And passed. Light. Blurring light and misty shadows, melting and twisting, and then coming into focus. A face. Eyes upon his. Pola. Things were sharp and clear to Arvidun in a single leaping bound. What time is it? His fingers were hard upon her wrist, so that she winced involuntarily. It's past 7, she whispered. Past the deadline. He looked about wildly, starting from the cot on which he lay, disregarding the burning in his joints. Checked, his lean figure huddled in a chair, raised his head to nod in brief mournfulness. It's all over, Arvidun. Then Ennius, said Schecht, would not take the chance. Isn't that strange? He laughed a queer, cracked, rasping laugh. The three of us single-handedly discover a vast plot against humanity. Single-handedly we capture the ringleader and bring him to justice. It's like a visicast, isn't it, with the great all-conquering hero zooming to victory in the nick of time. That's where they usually end it. Only in our case, the visicast went on and we found that nobody believed us. That doesn't happen in visicasts, does it? Things end happily there, don't they? It's funny. The words turned into rough, dry sobs. Arvidun looked away, sick. Pola's eyes were dark universes, moist and tear-filled. Somehow, for an instant, he was lost in them. They were universes, star-filled. And toward those stars, little, gleaming, metallic cases were streaking, devouring the light-years as they penetrated hyperspace and calculated deadly paths. Soon, perhaps already, they would approach, pierce atmospheres, fall apart into unseen, deadly rains of virus. Well, it was over. It could no longer be stopped. Where is Schwartz? He asked weakly. But Pola only shook her head. They never brought him back. The door opened, and Arvidun was not so far gone in the acceptance of death as to fail to look up with a momentary wash of hope upon his face. But it was Ennius, and Arvidun's face hardened and turned away. Ennius approached and looked momentarily at the father and daughter. But even now, Schecht and Pola were primarily Earth creatures and could say nothing to the procurator, even though they knew that short and violent as their future lives were to be, that of the procurator would be even shorter and more violent. Ennius tapped Arvidun on the shoulder. Dr. Arvidun? Your Excellency, said Arvidun in a raw and bitter imitation of the other's intonation. It is after 6 o'clock. Ennius had not slept that night. With his official absolution of Balkis had come no absolute assurance that the accusers were completely mad or under mental control. He had watched the soulless chronometer tick away the life of the galaxy. Yes, said Arvidun, it is after 6, and the stars still shine. But you still think you were right? Your Excellency, said Arvidun, in a matter of hours, the first victims will die. They won't be noticed. Human beings die every day. In a week, hundreds of thousands will have died. The percentage of recovery will be close to 0. No known remedies will be available. Several planets will send out emergency calls for epidemic relief. In 2 weeks, scores of planets will have joined the call, and states of emergency will be declared in the nearer sectors. In a month, the galaxy will be a writhing mass of disease. In 2 months, not 20 planets will remain untouched. In 6 months, the galaxy will be dead. And what will you do when those first reports come in? Let me predict that as well. You will send out reports that the epidemics may have started on Earth. This will save no lives. You will declare war on the ancients of Earth. This will save no lives. You will wipe the Earthman from the face of his planet. This will save no lives. Or else you will act as go-between for your friend Balkis and the Galactic Council, or the survivors thereof, you may then have the honor of handing the wretched remnants of the crumbs of the empire to Balkis in return for antitoxin, which may or may not reach sufficient worlds in sufficient quantities in sufficient time to save a single human being. Ennius smiled without conviction. Don't you think you're being ridiculously overdramatic? Oh, yes. I'm a dead man and you're a corpse, but let's be devilishly cool and imperial about it, don't you know? If you resent the use of the neuronic whip, not at all, ironically. I'm used to it. I hardly feel it anymore. Then I am putting it to you as logically as I can. This has been a nastiness. It will be difficult to report sensibly, yet as difficult to suppress without reason. Now, the other accusers involved are Earthmen. Your voice is the only one which would carry weight. Suppose you sign a statement to the effect that the accusation was made at a time when you were not in your... Well, we'll think of some phrase that will cover it without bringing in the notion of mental control. That would be simple. Say I was crazy, drunk, hypnotized, or drugged. Anything goes. Will you be reasonable? Now look, I tell you that you have been tampered with. He was whispering tensely. You're a man of Sirius. Why have you fallen in love with an Earth girl? What? Don't shout. I say, in your normal state, could you ever have gone native? Could you have considered that sort of thing? He nodded his head just perceptibly in the direction of Pola. For an instant, Arvidun stared at him in surprise. Then, quickly, his hand shot out and seized the highest imperial authority on Earth by the throat. And as his hands wrenched wildly and futilely at the other's grip, Arvidun said, "That sort of thing, eh? Do you mean Michette? If you do, I want to hear the proper respect, eh?" "Go away. You're dead anyway." Ennius said gaspingly, "Dr. Arvidun, you will consider yourself under a..." The door opened again and the colonel was upon them. "Your Excellency, the Earth rabble has returned." "What? Hasn't this Balkis spoken to his officials? He was going to arrange for a week's stay." "He has spoken, and he's still here. But so is the mob. We are ready to fire upon them, and it is my advice, as military commander, that we proceed to do that. Have you any suggestions, Your Excellency?" "Hold your fire until I see Balkis. Have him send him here." He turned. "Dr. Arvidun, I will deal with you later." Balkis was brought in, smiling. He bowed formally to Ennius, who yielded him the barest nod in return. "See here," said the procurator brusquely, "I'm informed your men are packing the approaches to Fort Vibran. This was not part of our agreement. Now, we do not wish to cause bloodshed, but our patience is not inexhaustible. Can you disperse them peaceably?" "If I choose, Your Excellency." "If you choose, you had better choose. And at once." "Not at all, Your Excellency." And now the secretary smiled and flung out an arm. His voice was a wild taunt, too long withheld, now gladly released. "Fool! You waited too long and can die for that, or live a slave if you prefer. But remember that it will not be an easy life." The wildness and fervor of the statement produced no shattering effect upon Ennius. Even here, at what was undoubtedly the profoundest blow of Ennius's career, the solidity of the imperial career diplomat did not desert him. It was only that the grayness and deep-eyed weariness about him deepened. "Then I lost so much in my caution. The story of the virus was true?" There was almost an abstract, indifferent wonder in his voice. "But Earth, yourself, you are all my hostages." "Not at all," came the instant victorious cry. "It is you and yours that are my hostages. The virus that now is spreading through the universe has not left Earth immune. enough already saturates the atmosphere of every garrison on the planet, including Everest itself. We of Earth are immune. But how do you feel, Procurator? Weak? Is your throat dry? Your head feverish? It will not be long, you know. And it is only from us that you can obtain the antidote. For a long moment, Ennius said nothing, his face thin and suddenly incredibly haughty. Then he turned to Arvidin and in cool, cultured tones said, Dr. Arvidin, I find I must beg your pardon for having doubted your word. Dr. Schecht? Miss Schecht? My apologies. Arvidin bared his teeth. Thank you for your apologies. They will be of great help to everybody. Your sarcasm is deserved, said the procurator. If you will excuse me, I will return to Everest to die with my family. Any question of compromise with this man is, of course, out of the question. My soldiers of the Imperial Procuracy of Earth will, I am sure, acquit themselves properly before their death, and not a few Earthmen will undoubtedly have time to light the way for us through the passages of death. Goodbye. Hold on, hold on. Don't go. Slowly, slowly, Ennius looked up to the new voice. Slowly, slowly, Joseph Schwartz, frowning a bit, swaying a bit with weariness, stepped across the threshold. The secretary tensed and sprang backward. With a sudden wary suspicion, he faced the man from the past. No, he gritted, you can't get the secret of the antidote out of me. Only certain men have it, and only certain others are trained to use it properly. All these are safely out of your reach for the time it takes the toxin to do its work. They are out of reach now, admitted Schwartz, but not for the time it would take the toxin to do its work. You see, there is no toxin and no virus to stamp out. The statement did not quite penetrate. Arvidin felt a sudden choking thought enter his mind. Had he been tampered with? Had all this been a gigantic hoax, one that had taken in the secretary as well as himself? If so, why? But Ennius spoke. Quickly, man, your meaning. It's not complicated, said Schwartz. When we were here last night, I knew I could do nothing by simply sitting and listening. So I worked carefully on the secretary's mind for a long time. I dared not be detected. And then, finally, he asked that I be ordered out of the room. That was what I wanted, of course. And the rest was easy. I stunned my guard and left for the airstrip. The fort was on a 24-hour alert. The aircraft were fueled, armed, and ready for flight. The pilots were waiting. I picked one out, and we flew to Saint-Lô. The secretary might have wished to say something. His jaws writhed soundlessly. It was Schecht who spoke. But you could force no one to fly a plane, Schwartz. It was all you could do to make a man walk. Yes, when it's against his will. But from Dr. Arvidin's mind, I knew how Syrians hated Earthmen. So I looked for a pilot who was born in the Sirius sector and found Lieutenant Claudy. Lieutenant Claudy, cried Arvidin. Yes. Oh, you know him. Yes, I see. It's quite clear in your mind. I'll bet. Go ahead, Schwartz. This officer hated Earthmen with a hate that's difficult to understand, even for me, and I was inside his mind. He wanted to bomb them. He wanted to destroy them. It was only discipline that tied him fast and kept him from taking out his plane then and there. That kind of a mind is different. Just a little suggestion, a little push, and discipline was not enough to hold him. I don't even think he realized that I climbed into the plane with him. How did you find Saint-Lô? Whispered Schecht. In my time, said Schwartz, there was a city called St. Louis. It was at the junction of two great rivers. We found Saint-Lô. It was night, but there was a dark patch in a sea of radioactivity, and Dr. Schecht had said the temple was an isolated oasis of normal soil. We dropped a flare, at least it was my mental suggestion, and there was a five-pointed building below us. It jibed with the picture I had received in the secretary's mind. Now there's only a hole, 100 feet deep, where that building was. That happened at 3 a.m. No virus was sent out, and the universe is free. It was an animal-like howl that emerged from the secretary's lips, the unearthly screech of a demon. He seemed to gather for a leap and then collapsed. A thin froth of saliva trickled slowly down his lower lip. "I never touched him," said Schwartz softly. Then, staring thoughtfully at the fallen figure, "I was back before 6, but I knew I would have to wait for the deadline to pass. Marcus would have to crow. I knew that from his mind, and it was from his own mouth only that I could convict him. Now, there he lies."